I declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council Business Team after the meeting. May I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises 6 reports from management, 2 items of general business. We have received an apology from Councillor Watts. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a council to move a resolution on document minutes of open meeting number 79 held on Tuesday the 9th of April 2016? Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillor Wood, I'll put that motion. All those in favour, that is unanimous. Thank you. Any matters arising from the minutes? As at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's Conduct of Meetings Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, Melbourne Spring Fashion Week, a request to speak from Chris Thrum. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, the Mail Exchange Hotel, a request to speak from Alison Elverd. And in relation to Agenda Item 6.4, 17 to 19 Gibbs Street, request to speak from Kelly Burns, and items of correspondence from Colette Mackay, Joanne Callahan and Craig Miller. In relation to Agenda Item 6.5, Ministerial Planning Referral 582 to 606 Collins Street, a request to speak from Derek Clough. In relation to Agenda Item 6.6, proposed smoke-free areas at the Tan and Princess Park running tracks, items of correspondence from Tony Keller and C. Lithoxopoulos. Is anybody here that I haven't read out who would like to address us? In that case, thank you, submitters. You are invited to address the committee at the time the agenda item is considered. You have 3 minutes to address the committee. We stick to the 3-minute time limit. There is a counter on the wall behind me. Beep sound at the completion of 2 minutes. You have 1 minute remaining, and the final beep signals the time allocated to you is finished. In accordance with the Council Resolution of 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period is always provided at the start and the end of each meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration, and this is not a time to make submissions. Submitters are invited to address the committee at the time the agenda item is considered. Anyone like to ask us a question? Yep, sorry. Second row first and then Shane. Yep, thank you. Could you tell us your name and then ask your question? Thanks.
Oh, sure. Hi, I'm Tristan Davies from Melbourne Heritage Action. Nice. Thanks for this. I'd just like to know what, if any, Council's position on the recent BCAT ruling allowing all but 2/3 of the Palace Theatre facade to be demolished. That's something which flies in the face of the recently gazetted Burke Hill Amendment, heritage guideline updates currently in progress by the City of Melbourne, and, of course, the upcoming C241 Palace Theatre Amendment, which would offer much greater protection than that. And we also want to know if Council has any intention of appealing a decision which essentially tells developers that undermining Council processes with hasty demolition and other stalling tactics is an acceptable means to an end.
I think the answer to that would be we are considering the VCAT decision, and it is a VCAT decision by a very, very senior member and one other of VCAT. We'll consider the options following legal advice and we'll make a decision once we've got both the evaluation of the decision and a piece of advice about what might be a feasible future path for us.
All right, thanks.
Welcome. Shane.
Yes, thank you. This question's for you, Lord Mayor. And it's in my capacity as Docklands publisher. I understand that prior to the 2012 elections, there was a pledge made for $500,000 to be spent on a trial of scheduled water transport. My memory says that $50,000 of that was spent on a study in the first year of the term. So my question is, can we expect to see the other $450,000 expended on such a process by the end of this term?
My memory, Shane, was that it wasn't $500,000. It was more in the order of $100,000. And my memory also, and I'm happy to be corrected, was that that was spent on the feasibility of study of the principal barrier to such transport, that is a vessel. And my further personal view would be the little proposal has somewhat subsumed that, but that is, of course, a major transport option into Docklands from the west of Melbourne and beyond. It doesn't really cover sort of inside Docklands water transport, in which I'm still very interested. So I think that's where we are.
Thanks.
Could I now please call on Councillor Mayne to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the finance and governance portfolio?
Thanks, Lord Mayor. There's one report from management for consideration in finance and governance tonight. It's item 6.1, the allocation of the discretionary fund, third quarter 2015-16. I'm happy to move the motion on the screen. It's seconded by Councillor Wood. So the way this works is that at the monthly council meeting on the last Tuesday of the month, we tend to have a confidential item dealing with some discretionary requests that have come in out of cycle or one-offs or just sort of odds and sods that aren't dealt with usual council programs. Some are refused, some are approved, and then once a quarter we publicly disclose the individual line items, which is a very good transparent process. So that's what we're doing tonight. So if you look at the report, you'll see there's some support for Chinese New Year, the Banksia Sustainable Cities Australia Awards, Africa Day, Gala Dinner, number of proposals to light up the Town Hall, and even a table at the Melbourne Press Club Quill Awards. So there's nothing particularly noteworthy, but it is a very transparent process that we do once a quarter, and I think it needs that transparency because we are making ultimately political council law decisions on small amounts of money out of the usual budget cycle. So this is how we level with the community and explain exactly what we've supported, and I think all of the projects that have been supported this year are worthy of the support. Councillor Wood. Any other speakers? Put that to the vote. All those in favour? Declare that carried unanimously, and hand over to Councillor Beverley Pinder Mortimer for the Marketing Melbourne portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. I would like to call on Chris Thrum, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, being 6.2 Melbourne Spring Fashion Week 2016.
Thank you, Councillor Beverley Pinder Mortimer. I'd like to applaud council officers and management for presenting this report into Melbourne Fashion Week. Melbourne Fashion Week is becoming a very important, iconic event for Melbourne. It excites and innovates the whole fashion community in the fashion world. And I think it's tremendous that the City of Melbourne supports the fashion industry in such a tremendous manner. Just like the location of like the hub down at City Square, the fashion runways at Town Hall here, there's a lot of thought and time and effort has been put in by Council to promote fashion, and Melbourne is a tremendous fashion location and it's one that we should be proud of. So again, kudos to the City of Melbourne for what they have done in regards to Melbourne Fashion Week. And on that note, I'd like to say thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. I'll move this motion, and I call on a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. So Melbourne Spring Fashion Week is one of our premier events, and it has had a very, very successful track record for more than 2 decades now. And integration and experience are the 2 key drivers for this event. that continues to be well received not only by visitors to Melbourne but also our retail and hospitality sector and our fashion institutions. So it's quite a landmark event in our calendar. Two key components again this year are the link the partnership with Vogue Australia for the Vogue American Express Fashion Night Out, and second, of course, the emerging designers drawn from six of our top institutes, from Kangan to RMIT, White House to the Holmes Glen Institute. So with retail, hospitality, our emerging talent, and a link with one of our top fashion titles, Melbourne Spring Fashion Week once again combines solid programming to deliver one of our best events in the annual calendar. So well done, team, and we're looking forward to another great year. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor. Look, like you, I think it's one of my favourite events that the City of Melbourne puts on. And the one part that I do enjoy the most is the continuous growth. From 60,200 people last year, we are expecting another 20% increase this year. And the best part about this whole event is so many of the parades are free to the public. And it just endorses the fact that the City of Melbourne is right behind the retail sector.
Thank you. Are there any speakers against the motion? Or any speakers for the motion? Any other speakers? Okay, I will now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour? Unanimous. Thank you. I now call on Councillor Ong to assume the role of the chair of the meeting in relation to the planning portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Pina-Mortimer. Tonight there are three reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio. The first item on the agenda is agenda item 6.3, which is a liquor inquiry 2016-45, the Mail Exchange Hotel at 688 Bourke Street, Melbourne. Councillors, would you like a presentation on this agenda item? Nope. In that case, I will call on the speaker, Alison Albert, on behalf of BSP lawyers to address the committee. You have 3 minutes, Alison.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Mayor and Councillors. My name's Alison Elvett. I'm from Bazzani, Scully, Priddle Lawyers, and I'm representing the operators of the Mail Exchange Hotel here today. I have with me Mr. Alexander Robertson, a director of the licensee company, and Mr. Michael Robertson, the operations manager for the hotel group within which the Mail Exchange Hotel sits. We'd like to commend the officer's report that is before you this evening, which is both thorough and succinct, a rare quality in such a report. You've got a very busy number of agenda items tonight. I simply wanted to let the councillors know that we are available here to answer any questions that you may have in relation to that agenda item.
Thank you. Alison, any questions for the speaker? No. In that case, you may take your seat. Thank you for that. Okido, I will, as the chair of planning, I'll move the recommendation that's up on the screen. I'll call a councillor to second that. Lord Mayor, yes. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation, and thank you to officers for the report. The report's very clear in terms of what the rules are since the minister has allowed certain changes since, middle last year in July. And the resultant is that it meets within the guidelines of where the maximum patron number of 200 in this area can trade up to 3 a.m. Personally, you know, where council has had in the past issues with trying to cope with gaming. As an instance, this extra 2 hours means extra gaming. But from purely from a planning perspective, it ticks all the boxes, it complies with the regulations, and therefore I'm supportive of what the officers have recommended. And not going to add too much more to that. Lord Mayor.
The only thing I'd add is there are obviously statutory rules around this, but for me the critical thing is the responsible and excellent track record of management and the operator of this venue. And in each case where this has been the case, we have agreed to an extension of license hours, and I think importantly in becoming a 24-hour city, particularly with 24-hour public transport on the weekends, we need to normalise the city, and this is one of the changes that I think will do that, to make that 2 a.m. feel more like 11 p.m. And for me, it is the track record of management and the operator that gives me confidence to support it.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any speakers against the motion? Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. I agree that the quality of the report is excellent and the conclusions reached are very sound and solid. I happen to have a different conclusion myself, and I'll just explain briefly why that is. The system that's currently been set up by Minister Garrett requires councils to express an opinion on whether or not it supports the extension of a liquor licence past 1 a.m. The request here, of course, is an extension from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. Now, our planning delegate has done everything that the planning delegate was meant to do, and that is to refer to the only policy available that the council has, which is the clause in our planning scheme that refers to liquor licensing, and it suggests that an extension of time past 1 a.m. is perfectly fine so long as the residential amenity of the surrounds is not unreasonably impacted. I believe, based on the report, that the amenity is not unreasonably impacted on the surrounds. However, the decision by council in a matter such as this is a decision which is not reviewable. It is the expression of an opinion of the council, which is referred back, and it's actually something that if the council says should not be done, will not be done. So we're not operating in the normal parts. This is not a normal planning application in that sense. Council is able to express an opinion without reference to any particular policy. Our delegate has referred to the only policy that we currently do have. We should have an electronic gaming machines policy coming back to us for consideration soon, and that's something that will happen in the future. But we are entitled in this place at this time to express our own opinions. My opinion is that I do not want to intensify access to gaming machines in this particular venue in this particular time, and because the decision is not reviewable by council and we're not under the normal constraints, I'm very happy to vote against this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Further speakers to the motion? Speakers against the motion? Councillor Main.
I'm also opposed to it. I support the 24-hour city and the vibrant nightlife as well, but a gaming venue open 20 hours a day, because at the moment it already opens at 7 in the morning. I mean, not that many pubs that open at 7 in the morning, and then we'll trade through till 3 a.m. I guess the broader context here is that Australians lose more per capita from gambling than any other people in the world, and the majority of that is from poker machines, and the machines that are allowable in Australia are particularly dangerous and addictive, so-called high-intensity poker machines. So we've got some perverse approaches to dangerous products in Australia. Smoking, we tax it like never before. Just watch the budget tonight, and we've got the lowest smoking rates in the world. Road safety, best policies in the world, lowest deaths on the road per vehicle in the world. But a dangerous gambling product, worst in the world. And it just goes down to the perverse incentives within the system, which is states that do all the spending and all the heavy work with very narrow revenue bases, and one of the few things they can turn to is poker machine revenue. And so we have the poor old state governments who are addicted to poker machine revenue and making perverse policy decisions which are raining misery down on people who are most vulnerable and get addicted. And so when you locate these dangerous products, ideally you don't put them next to in shopping centres or next to train stations. And since regional rail opened, this has become one of the busiest thoroughfares in the city. I can understand the commercial imperative of catching people after they get off the train to come into work in the morning, or someone walking home, stumbling to the train at 1 o'clock, and then being diverted and dropping a few hundred. That's the nature of the business. And I just, in my conscience, cannot vote for something that makes it more available. I agree that the planning is all very clear, and I don't advocate spending 10 grand losing in VCAT on this, because I know where it will go. I'm just complaining about the system and the incentives and voting on conscience to oppose this proposal tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Main. Any further speakers? Two or four? Four.
Yeah, that was confusing, Chair. I'll speak in support of the officer recommendation. I respect my colleagues' views, some of which I share, but what we're faced with here is a venue operator has complied with all legal requirements, has very onerous conditions on their licence, and we've got a planning decision which fits all the planning rules. So that, for me, is what this is about. So that's why I'll be supporting the officer recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Are there any further speakers against the motion? Councillor Foster?
Thank you, Chair. I have very little to add to what Councillor Mayne had to say, but I do share the sentiments of his sentiments and that of Councillor Lippert. For me, it is a issue of conscience. I think it's a very solid officer report, so I've certainly got nothing negative to say about the report. Again, it does tick statutory boxes, and that's got to be acknowledged. On a matter of conscience, yeah, look, I don't think there's a lot in terms of livability that increased access to pokie machines really offer a city like Melbourne. For that reason, among the others that have already been stated, I'll be voting against it.
Thank you, Councillor Foster. Further speakers at all? Nope. Thank you for my fellow councillors on both the opposing views. Some is a conscience thing. As the Chair of Planning, I understand some of the concerns raised. When I look at it as how we manage the system and the rules that we have, I always believe in the integrity of the system that we go, irrespective of how personally I feel from a conscience perspective. Respecting all that, I'm going to put this to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Ong, Councillor Wood, Councillor Louis. All those against, raise your hands. And Councillor Pina-Mortimer, sorry, it's blocked. All those against? Councillor Leppard, Councillor Oak, Councillor Mayne, Councillor Foster. I declared it carried 6-4. Thank you. Next agenda item, which is planning permit application TP2015-45 relating to number 17 to 19 Gibb Street, East Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. In that case, I'll call Kelly Burns on behalf of SJB to present. Kelly, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, councillors, for the opportunity to address the committee this evening. SJB Planning has represented the permit applicant over the course of this planning application. Perhaps fortuitously for adjoining and surrounding residents, the site has been vacant for over 2 years. As with all heritage buildings, sitting in its dilapidated state is not helping it age gracefully, and the retention of the valued heritage elements of the extant building requires substantial funds input to bring it back to life. The building also sits in a level two streetscape because the predominant heritage character has been preserved well in Gibb Street. In combination with the heritage overlay and building and streetscape gradings, the site is affected by an 8-metre mandatory height control imposed by the general residential zone. In devising a residential development scheme that appropriately retained the important heritage elements on the site and contributed positively to the streetscape, the permit applicant considered other contextual factors, including site coverage in the wider area, dwelling type, and car parking provision opportunities. The development innovatively responds to the site's opportunities and constraints. It converts a former shop to a residential dwelling and removes a shopfront from the residential street, retains, restores, and rejuvenates key elements of the heritage building on the site, responds to the site's height control by providing subterranean floor levels and utilising split floor levels to provide for the four dwellings, provides energy efficient, low maintenance housing in an area that is less than 3 kilometres from the CBD, provides car parking on site in a manner which it does occupy a reasonable depth of the site at the rear, but which will provide for 2 car spaces per dwelling within an automated parking system. The permit applicant has agreed to a Section 173 agreement regarding the size of vehicles on the site. The development will form... Sorry, I've overshot and now I've lost my place. The planning system seeks to facilitate the redevelopment of land in Victoria and provides for the first step in a detailed approvals process. The site is in a highly urbanised location and its redevelopment may cause inconvenience while it's underway. In considering similar objections and concerns, Member Byard noted in a recent VCAT case, and this is more about structural issues than construction management inconvenience, but concerns were expressed about structural stability when excavations are carried out to provide for foundations, footings and basements. These are matters of civil engineering capable of resolution and not really planning concerns in the circumstances.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Any questions for the speaker? No, you may take a seat.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll move the recommendation that's up on the screen. I call on councillor to second that. Councillor Leppard. I'll say a few quick words about this. I read through the report in detail, like most of us. The submissions have come in late this afternoon from neighbouring properties. All of us, yes. Sorry, Lord Mayor. Slip of the tongue. It's interesting that the number of issues that are raised, and then the officer's report went through and addressed it. The issues about too many car parks, that's brought down to 8 from 12. I call this in, even though technically there are 14 objections, where the trigger point is 16, mainly because what we're seeing here, and this is the second time that we've seen it in the East Melbourne area, and I predict that because, as mentioned before, it's in the general residential zone with a maximum mandatory 8-metre height limit with strong heritage controls in most of East Melbourne, which we are seeing in also parts of North and North Melbourne, Kensington and Carlton, that further expansions or densification in very attractive parts of the city will probably drive some developments underground. And that's one of the key issues raised in the objections in regards to excavation works, construction works that could impact neighbouring properties. And I think that's a key issue that the officers have looked at. There's a note on the last page of the conditions to make sure that the compliance of the construction management plan, especially with respect to neighbouring properties, is looked at. The other issues that are raised in terms of coverage and open space and so forth. In terms of development, yes, it is dense. It's quite innovative in some ways of going down and having rooms in the basement with courtyard light access as totally underground rooms, which is something that we don't support. In terms of the other key issues on permeability, I think there are a number of considerations that the designers have included, but in the end, when I look at it, the Hayes Lane access, the condition here, including a 173 agreement that it should be only what you call B50 type cars or vehicles, which is limited to 4.45 meters long and 1.75 meters wide, which is about the size of an A-class Mercedes, considering it's East Melbourne. Yes, well, I trust the report's done all the measurements. Yes, I had a look at Hayes. It is narrow, but there are similar narrow laneways of bluestone nature in many parts of Carlton, behind the shops, and we see the actual owners get in, even the clean the bins and everything. And somehow I see Bentleys even getting into those little laneways. Right, so there must be some seriously good drivers out there. But the key consideration when I looked at this was excavation work underground in these sort of buildings. Based on an experience not so long ago, we had the major incident in Mount Waverley Burwood, where an excavation of an old petrol station site caused neighbouring properties to totter on the edge of collapse. And we wouldn't want to see this happening here. So I commend the officers for taking special consideration and making sure that it is noted in here. I think in the longer term, the council will need to approach the state government and looking at the building regulations as proposals like these become more common, because the current planning rules does not cover these. And whether the building regulations cover it enough detail, I think there's still some work to be done on the statewide level. I'll leave it at that, and I'll let my second, Councillor Leppard, to finish the discussion.
Finish the discussion. Oh, very good. Thank you, Chair. There's quite a lot about this application which is quite positive, and quite a lot which worries me tremendously, but which is nevertheless supported by Council's planning scheme and policies. I commend the handling of the retention of the heritage form, and I note that the heritage consultant to which this application was referred has come back with a relatively positive report, and the assessment's quite thorough. The treatment of that heritage place is better than we often see, particularly for a place that's graded as it's graded. The mover mentioned the sheer density of the site, despite it falling within a mandatory 8-metre height limit in this residential zone, and it is a very dense site considering how low it goes and the coverage of the site. I am very worried about the trend we're seeing towards greater density underground within this mandatory height limit area. And it may cause Council to keep a watching brief and to make sure that as we go forward, we either do look at other planning policies which can make sure that no problems arise, or we can advocate on building grounds, as the mover has said. At the moment, there are no policies in place that prevent any of this. There's only a height above ground that has a built form control. There's no controls about how low you can go. So there's no basis upon which Council here now can refuse the extent of the basement. There's adequate light to all of the rooms that go down there, and there's a reduction in off-street car parks as well, so it's not quite as large as the application's drawing state. And of course, the structural issues and the potential risks to neighbouring properties is not a matter for here, and it's not a planning matter. If it was, I'm sure we'd be discussing it extensively, but let's all just hope that the building permit process is carried out adequately. That's a completely privatised process that we can't really canvass in our reasons for support or refusal here. The mover's already noted that there's a note on the planning permit, and that's all we can do, is note that their building permit process is yet to come. The other concern I've got is with the sheer coverage of the site. 97% of the site is covered up with built form, and only 3% of the site is permeable. Of course, that's a big breach of res code, but this standard in res code is breached in the inner city all the time, and we always overlook this standard in the inner city all of the time. Again, we need to be very careful going forward that if we are seeing site coverage at nearly 100% rates throughout the very dense inner suburbs, what effect is that going to have on our urban forest? What effect is that going to have on the livability of those suburbs? What effect is that going to have on any other issues that we may not yet have thought about? So I am very worried about it, but again, I acknowledge that there's precedent here that tribunal would never uphold a refusal based on site permeability and site site coverage, because it is so dense in the inner city. And so I reluctantly agree with our planning delegate, who has done another outstanding job again. So despite all those concerns, I think it's something we do need to support here. I acknowledge the extent of the objections. These are very real concerns in the objections. Some of them I hope are going to be dealt with in the building permit process, and all we can do as Council is pledge to keep a watching brief on some of these other issues as we see some of these trends coming through in eastern Melbourne and other areas. But there's no basis for refusal at this stage.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Further speakers? Nope. On that, I don't want to add more to what Councillor Leppard's covered. Extremely well. I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. Lord Mayor, I have an external council speech commitment. At this stage, I have to leave, and I hand over the chair to Councillor Leppard, my deputy.
I also have a conflict of interest with Addenda Item 6.5 as it is a donor investment.
I too have a conflict of interest with Agenda Item 6.5.
As do I.
And ditto as do I.
So we're in chorus, and I won't be chairing this part of the meeting, but I'll invite Director Jeff Lawler to just make a quick comment about what will happen next.
Councillors, ladies and gentlemen, the meeting has failed to achieve a quorum for this item, so this matter will not be able to be considered by the Future Melbourne Committee. On that basis, what is contained in the papers will be conveyed to the department by the administration in the form of advice.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors. There is one report from management for consideration under the People City portfolio. Item 6.6, proposed smoke-free areas at the Tan and Princess Park running tracks. Would Councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Okay, okay, so I'm happy to move the item. Is there a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Wood. Look, I won't speak too long about this one. I think, you know, smoke-free zones are something that Melbourne's getting very, very used to. We're now, I think, up to, subject to these two passing, it will take us to nine smoke-free areas across the city. Important to mention, though, that these will actually be the far and away the largest single areas that we would have prescribed as smoke-free areas. Many people have been saying to me these are just the no-brainers, and I think it's kind of right. They are no-brainers. They're regarded as fitness meccas, and it just doesn't stand to reason that you'd want to have too many cigarettes around when you're simply trying to be fit and you're trying to exercise. That was actually reflected in the extensive consultation that's been carried out by officers prior to putting this report together. I had to just note a couple of the comments in there that were actually from smokers. And it's not the first time we've heard this sort of thing, but I think it's worth mentioning. One of them says, I exercise here and it annoys me even though I smoke. And you hear that quite a lot around the city in a number of the other smoke-free areas. Another one was, smoking is gross. It's an exercise area. You know, I couldn't have said it better myself. So, look, there's a high expectation, I think, now that we continue down the track that that we started some three-odd years ago and have moved through very, very successfully. And I would like to think these two areas will be yet another two great success stories for Melbourne's smoke-free message. Councillor Wood.
I agree, Councillor Foster. I think this is a great thing to continue this rollout. I couldn't agree more. When you're running a lap of the Tan, it's hard enough for people of my sort of fitness levels to cope without having a puff of smoke blowing in your direction as you're sucking in that last gasp of air. So wholeheartedly support this and look forward to the rollout continuing.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Nope. In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Who's next? I'll now... ask the Lord Mayor to resume carriage of the meeting.
Thank you. There are two items of general business to be considered. The first is proposed travel by Councillor Pinder-Mortimer to Sydney in May 2016. And I call on Councillor Pinder-Mortimer to move a motion with respect to this matter.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. So moved.
I'm happy to second that, Councillor Pinder-Mortimer.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Chinese New Year 2016 was a tremendous success, and in a small part, due to a trip to Sydney in 2014 attended a meeting with Councillor Robert Koch at the City of Sydney and brought back a range of of ideas and ways in which to conduct a citywide festival. And this year's festival, which emanated from the heart and soul in Chinatown all the way through to Federation Square, Docklands, Yarra River Precinct and even Queen Victoria Market, has been regarded by all as a huge success. So to further advance the work that we've been doing, I feel that a trip to Sydney to meet with Councillor Cock again would be advantageous, and accompanying me would be Jane Nathan, Chair of CNY United, an organisation formed to steer the citywide approach to Chinese New Year. And in addition to the meeting with Councillor Cock, I've also arranged for two meetings with potential sponsors. So I anticipate that trip to Sydney would bring about some tremendous dividends for Chinese New Year 2017.
Thank you. I commend Councillor Pinder-Mortimer for her efforts in trying to grow Chinese New Year as a major tourist event and destination. Much as I hate to admit it, Sydney probably do Chinese New Year better than we do, but with a much greater investment in it. So let's learn what we can and take what we can from them and continue to grow one of our great multicultural festivals. Further speaker to debate? Okay, so I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's unanimous. Thank you. Could I call notice of motion now, Councillor Mayne. Invitation to large US companies to relocate to Melbourne under a Trump-led US government. Could I call on Councillor Mayne to move a motion with respect to this matter?
I move the motion on the screen, Lord Mayor.
Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Wood. Councillor Mayne.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. After close to 40 successful motions over 3.5 years, I must admit I'm not too confident this evening. But I will say this was a serious endeavour with some might say a humorous element, but like many people, I've been offended and upset with some of the statements that Donald Trump has made, and was thinking about what can people do about that. And then I thought, well, actually, there's a positive that can come out of it, which is talking up Melbourne and Melbourne's great credentials. So I put those two together, and it's what's on the screen, which is that we write to everyone from Warren Buffett to Tim Cook at Apple and the top 15 companies, and we spell out all of the great credentials that Melbourne has as a great international city with plenty of space, a great cohesion, Rob Adams's wonderful parks and city design, and why wouldn't you come and locate here? And I thought that it would generate some debate, and it would make a few other people ask the question, what are they doing to try and put pressure on that the Americans don't make a disastrous decision of appointing a misogynist, racist con man as their next leader? So we don't want an isolationist...
As opposed to their past.
Yes. I've proposed the motion. There's no cost. I mean, it's just it's a letter. There are 35 American listed companies which are worth more than $100 billion. And if you think about the fact that the Commonwealth Bank is our biggest company and it's worth $94 billion, is there's 35 companies that are bigger than our biggest. If one of them came, wouldn't that be fantastic? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Why not ask? It's a costless endeavour. So I simply ask my colleagues to think about that. And I think we've had some good media discussion about it. Herald Sun, Mashable this afternoon, The Age, some social media discussion. If this motion is passed, I think that you'll find there will be considerable American international debate talking up Melbourne and its credentials and posing this question. So I think it's a free kick to send this message in a slightly humorous but slightly serious way. And I'd invite councillors to take a deep breath and to vote in favour.
Often. Councillor Wood is seconder for this motion.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I second it, but I'm actually speaking against the motion.
An unusual position.
It is an unusual position, but I do enjoy my colleague bringing these ideas to us from time to time, and he has had a very good strike rate, you would say. While I share his lack of respect for Mr. Trump and all he stands for, he's frankly a global embarrassment, really, that a guy like that can get to where he's got to. in one of the most important races on our planet. But I think we've got a very full calendar for fourth year of a council program, a lot to focus on, a lot of actions to complete. And I just think this is a little bit of overreach. I like the councillor's optimism in that writing to Google and Facebook and those sort of people to come and locate themselves here may have some sort of impact. I prefer just to wear the tag the world's most livable city for 5 years in a row and have that attract them here, and our excellent marketing and business campaigns that do that anyway. So while I completely support Councillor Main's commentary on Donald Trump, I think we've got a busy calendar and this is just a little bit too far for me.
Is there a further speaker to debate? Councillor Oak.
To the debate. I won't support your notice of motion, Councillor Main. I did think about it seriously, as we do all motions towards us, and I did put it out to Facebook, actually, to find from some of my ex-councillor colleagues how they would consider this if it came to their council. And actually, I received some quite good feedback, and I agree with one in particular, and in taking it seriously what you're asking us, that I think one of the best things that the City of Melbourne does actually do is work with our international cities through city networks or over a range of topics, whether it's sustainability or arts and culture. And I think one of the best things we can do is actually encourage the good guys to stay and be there to support them through our networks and through our international partners. Then I think that yes, you know, encouraging everyone to leave, I don't think that's the way forward. I think we should encourage people to stay, and that we, as a leader in the world of cities, we should be encouraging them to continue to work with us, and we'll support them through potential times of trouble.
Further speaker to debate? Move wish to conclude.
I guess there's some things I agree with Councillor Oak that working with our officers constructively in a positive way is always a good thing to do, but there's some things that only elected politicians can do. This is not something that DFAT could do. This is not something that any diplomat could do. This is over the top, a political statement, unusual but strong political statement, and I think that you would be surprised at the positive discussion about Melbourne and everything we have to offer that would flow, whilst also giving a noxious individual one across the chops, which would also be good. So, again, councillors, be brave. I'll close my eyes for the vote and hope to be surprised by what I hear.
When I call for the vote, could I make it clear that if councillors choose neither to vote for nor against, I will regard that as an abstention from voting, and an abstention, of course, counts as a vote against. Those for. Councillor Main. Those against. Councillor Wood, Deputy Lord Mayor. I will count the other councillors as an abstention, and therefore the motion is lost. This concludes the items of general business for consideration in the open session. Could I make a slight amendment to our order? I would foreshadow that we will close this meeting to consider an item of both urgent and confidential business. So rather than putting people out then bringing them back, if anybody would like to ask or say a question, we always provide 15 minutes at the start and the end for questions. I'd invite them to do so now. In that case, could I call on a councillor to move the motion on the screen to close the meeting for consideration of an item of urgent business? Councillor Wood and Deputy Lord Mayor, I'll put that motion. All those in favour, that is unanimous. Thank you. Can I thank members of the public and management for their attendance and declare the open meeting closed at 6:31 p.m.